Hey guys, how's it going? Is it a holiday this week or something? Easter and all that's over, right? Good this and Ash that, that's all done. Was it Mother's Day coming up? I don't know. I can't seem to get anybody on the show. That's alright, because I can interview my damn self for 2 hours. Think I can't? Give me a break. Got a lot of invites out, so maybe someone will still come through and we'll get a chance to interview them about the thing that we invite them on the show to interview them about. But that's all right. I got plenty of smack to talk myself if not. So, yeah, man, I don't know. I guess the first order of business is to tell you that Sneaker, he's the server guy. He says, oh yeah, no, seriously, the emails, they're going to start working again today. Now, I don't know if that means that the website and the archives will start working again today or not. Frankly, the emails are more important. I haven't gotten an email since last Friday. And it's been nice, but it's also been a problematic problem, as you might anticipate. I might even be a little bit more dependent on emails than the average PC chained kook out there. So anyway, but yeah, no, that's supposed to happen. And yeah, you know, with Sneaker, it always ends up happening. So. And then, we'll all be able to hang out in the chat room again someday. You'll be able to download the archives. I was joking around with the guys on Twitter. Everybody who tweets me says, I need a fix. What's taking so long for you to fix your server? I need a fix. Ha ha, pun. They say, I'm jonesing. They say, other, you know, need drugs terms. And it's kind of nice to know that the few of you who really do like the show, you really do like it a lot, apparently. So that's nice. Sorry about the server being down. I do gotta wonder, can't help but wonder how many listeners are going to realize, you know what, now that I've kicked the Scott Horton Show habit like a bad case of the cigarettes, I think maybe now I'll just go ahead and stay quit and move on with their lives. It's gonna have to be a certain percentage. None of you, right? But maybe some of them. So I'll just have to get better. And try to build my audience back up again after this catastrophe. I don't know, man. You have to go through the trouble of unsubscribing from the podcast feed on iTunes or that kind of thing for the people who listen to the MP3 later. And by the way, for you people who listen to the MP3 later, you know the show is live noon to 2 every day at the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM, right? Yeah, well, all the people listening live know that and wonder why I'm telling them, but that's how I get it recorded for the archive for the podcast for later, too. All right. And here's why you should keep listening to my show. Tomorrow, I'm going to have James Bovard on about the Waco massacre. And I'm going to have Roger Charles on about the Oklahoma City massacre. And you'll want to hear both of them, I think, if you're interested in knowing things that are important. And I assume many of you are. So, that's tomorrow. I promise. And now I did say yesterday, I claimed on Twitter that I was going to have Adam Morrow on today, but we had a scheduling conflict. So what's going to happen is, it's Adam Morrow, man. I really like that guy. So he's worth it. This is totally against the rules. So don't anybody get any ideas, but I'm going to go ahead, I think, and record one with him next week after the show at some point to play the next day. And learn all about what the hell is going on in Egypt and what the people of Egypt think about their military dictatorship's intervention in Yemen. And all of these kinds of things. So, it was someone on Twitter said, hey man, you should get Adam Morrow back on. And then I called them right during the break and we thought we were going to be able to work it out, so I claimed too soon that it was worked out. Sorry. But I'll have him on for you next week. Cool. All right. And now, I don't know, man. I guess I don't think this warrant spending too much time on. Really, the bottom line is, this is hilarious. Did you see about how Richard Engel, how the story of his phony kidnapping back in 2012 has now officially fallen apart? The New York Times did a big series on it. And he was kidnapped, but he was kidnapped by the FSA, the moderate rebels in Syria. And the whole thing was a very dubious, from the get-go, attempt to frame up the pro-Assad Shiite militias. And now the New York Times has taken that apart. And I thought to myself, hey, brain, ain't this familiar to you? And then I thought, yeah, of course it was the Moon of Alabama blog. It's easy to remember because it's so blue. And so I remembered, yeah, it was the Moon of Alabama blog. They debunked this back when it was happening. So all I had to do was hit my bookmark for the Moon of Alabama. And then all I had to do was type in Engel and hit the search site button. And up came, this is a bunch of crap, dated, that's not the actual title, something very close to that, from back in 2012. And they linked in there, Moon of Alabama dude linked to the Angry Arab blog, where he was just going through the footage here of Engel being held by the bad guys and how, you know, it has all this completely ridiculous, like way over the top Shiite graffiti painted on the walls and all of this stuff. And the Angry Arab blog said at the time, if this is legitimate, then I'm posing as a dentist. Which is, I guess, his way of saying, yeah, I'm not buying this. All right, the Moon of Alabama article from December 19th, 2012. It's called Another Indication That Richard Engel's Kidnapping Story Stinks. And, of course, the New York Times, claiming an exclusive here, they didn't do their research at all. They don't give Moon of Alabama any credit. And, in fact, they didn't even, probably didn't even look at this, because it seems like they would have stolen his work at the Moon of Alabama blog, where he points out that the guy who interviewed Richard Engel upon his liberation from the terrible pro-Assad militia, he was interviewed by a guy who was already busted for being involved in hoax videos, pretending to be a victim or pretending to be a Shiite extremist, anti-American fighter or whatever. So this guy was already a known faker, and then he's the one who got the exclusive interview with Engel. And anyway, the whole thing, you can read at the Moon of Alabama blog, where, you know, they're saying, come on, he was, and the Angry Arab that he links to here, that there's no reason to even doubt for a minute that it was a faction of the FSA that kidnapped him and a faction of the same FSA that so-called pretend to rescued him. And then, but now according to the story, and I guess it's believable, Richard Engel still had no idea about this. As he writes in his piece at MSNBC, we just went about our day and went back to work, and that was that as far as we knew, and had no idea that the story had been debunked elsewhere on the internet in real time. I guess that's believable, you know, I don't know. But part of the New York Times story is that the NBC executives all knew that he was abducted by Sunnis. They knew who abducted him and where he was and who controlled that territory, and including the names of some of the jihadists that had kidnapped him. And, or I don't know if they're jihadists or not, they're the moderates, which means they're the jihadists who get along with the Americans, I guess. And so they knew all along, but they let Richard Engel go on TV over and over and over again and tell what they knew was the wrong story, including on the Maddow show, and including then just off the cuff implicating Hezbollah and Iran. Yeah, everybody knows these guys are friends with Hezbollah and Iran. And the whole thing was a hoax, as proven years ago at moonofalabama.org. you hate government, one of them libertarian types, or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers. Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. And, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The next of these great workshops is Saturday, April 25th in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. It's just $15. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions. All right, you guys, welcome back. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show. Okay, cool. Yeah, I'm doing too many things at once here. That's kind of my thing. Too many things at once. Okay. I don't want to dwell too long on this story, except for I appreciate the ha-ha, Richard Engel. You damned fool at best. That's the best interpretation of this, is that he's simply an idiot, not a damned liar. But anyway, so let's get to the important part of my assertion here and see if I can, not necessarily prove it, but lend a little more credence to it by citing my source. I'm now cribbing from Greenwald, who wrote up a thing about it at The Intercept. Let's see, here's the quotes of all of him telling the story wrong. And then, let me make sure I didn't pass it. God dang, man. Well, I should have had this queued up during the break. I know what I'll do. I will search for the word executives on this page, because that's in the quote. Aha! See, here we go. Here's Greenwald at The Intercept. He says, NBC News executives, in writing his news account, Engel does not mention the most important and most incriminating aspect of the New York Times reporting, that NBC officials knew at the time there was reason to be highly skeptical of the identity of the captors, but nonetheless allowed Engel and numerous other NBC and MSNBC reporters to tell this story with virtually no questioning. And then he quotes the New York Times. Mr. Engel's team was almost certainly taken by a Sunni criminal element affiliated with the Free Syrian Army, the loose alliance of rebels opposed to Mr. Assad, the so-called moderate ones. That rebel group is, quote, known as the North Idlib Falcons Brigade and is led by two men, Azo Kassab and Shukuri Ajui. Amazingly, NBC executives knew that this was at least very possible, even during Engel's kidnapping. And yet, quoting the Times here, NBC executives were informed of the FSA possible involvement during and after Engel's captivity, according to current and former NBC employees and others who helped search for Mr. Engel, including political activists and security professionals. Still, the network moved quickly to put Mr. Engel on the air with an account blaming Shiite captors and did not present the other possible version of events. So, of course, this is the New York Times' most, you know, positive spin on stating this fact. Very carefully chosen words here. They put their stupid idiot up there to tell what they knew was a lie. In other words, writes Greenwald, NBC executives at least had ample reason to suspect that it was anti-Assad rebels who staged the kidnapping, not pro-Assad forces. Yet they allowed Engel and numerous other NBC and MSNBC personalities repeatedly and unequivocally to blame the Assad regime and glorify the anti-Assad rebels, and worse, to link the hideous kidnapping to Iran and Hezbollah, all with no indication that there were other quite likely alternatives. NBC refused to respond to the New York Times questions about it, and same for The Intercept. Anyway. Oh, yeah. Also refused comment to The Intercept. So anyway, there you go. And then Greenwald, I think, importantly, compares this to Brian Williams. And I think this is, for those of us who are real news junkies, and this is kind of the obvious objection to the Brian Williams thing, was here he only gets in trouble for his own personal tall tales. Yeah, and then one time there was bullets whizzing right by my head, and I was really brave, everybody. That got him in trouble. But retelling government lies, national security state lies, all day long. Well, everybody knows that Iraq's aluminum tubes are a real GD problem, everybody. The only question is, what are we going to do about it? Quote Brian Williams and every single one of the rest of them. That's all perfectly fine. Yes, it makes perfect sense that America should be backing the Sunni-based insurgency allied with Al-Qaeda in Syria, the very same enemy that we just finished losing to in Iraq. Sorta. Against Assad, the guy with the three-piece suit and the clean-shaven chin that used to work for George Bush torturing these guys for us and killing them. That's all perfectly fine. Every serious and respectable news person in America has known the obvious truth for the past 4 years that, of course, Assad must go. And, of course, never even mind the presence of the al-Nusra Front head-chopping suicide bombers and the Islamic State that broke off from them. Hey, if our government says Assad's got to go, because that's what Israel and Turkey and Saudi want, then hey, everybody knows that. These are the kinds of lies that they all get away with. And if any of them got it straight, they'd be the one out on their ass. And then so the problem here is Engel's story is kind of a cross between the two, right? Now, he probably didn't knowingly lie about this. He was kidnapped by some guys pretending to be Shiite allies of Assad and bought it. And then he's used by liars to tell the lie. And it's his own kind of personal tall tale. Only it takes place right in the midst of a massive propaganda campaign to try to get the American people behind intervening in Syria even more on the side of the Sunni-based insurgency against the Ba'athist dictatorship there. They did. They intervened with plenty of money and guns, and you can read all about that. You needn't go further than the New York Times and the Washington Post to know that all the money and weapons and lethal and non-lethal aid and whatever they provided, including fleets of Toyota pickup trucks and the rest of this, that all that ended up going to the so-called extremists, because as I've been basically chanting to you like some kind of mantra since 2011, moderates don't fight in a war like this. This is the Mujahideen versus the Ba'athists. There are no moderates. There are some who will talk to the Americans, but basically they're just middlemen arms dealers saying, yeah, give us weapons, and then turn around and giving them to the guys who don't mind dying. The bin Ladenites. The first to volunteer to go and fight against Assad. And so that's what's funny about this is Greenwald actually, I think, makes the opposite point than he's trying to make when he says this is like an aluminum tubes level scandal. This is on the level of Iraqi aluminum tubes. And what he means by that is that's a horrible, stupid lie, that it's unbelievable that they ever got away with threatening us with aluminum tubes that everybody knew were for rockets. Hell, it was debunked in the Washington Post in September 2002. And then for another 6 months, they kept using it as an excuse to invade Iraq as though they just amounted to spinning centrifuges of weapons-grade uranium or something. But really, it's an example more like, you know, less like Brian Williams and more like the aluminum tubes, meaning it's more of a war lie than a personal one, and so they'll get away with it.
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world, all specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I just got an email from a guy who says, hey, I really like your show, but, you know, it's hard to jump right into the middle of all this Middle East madness and not know what's what, so you got to give us the background. Not dumb it down, but just start at the beginning, right? Now, the problem is I totally feel your pain, man, you know, like I'm Bill Clinton or something. But here's the thing about that. I do that as much as I can, but I gotta try to kind of sort of split the difference between that and not simply doing the exact same show over and over again every day, having to catch up on all of the background. And also, I remember back when I first, really got into talk radio when I was younger, that there were times where, man, I really am lost here. But then I kind of recognized that, hey, it's expected of me that I keep up here. And if I'm going to understand what they're talking about on this show, I'm going to have to read some things. All right. And so take it as a challenge. And here's your cheat sheet. You don't even have to go and read all the Chalmers Johnson trilogy or anything, man. Just start reading antiwar.com, especially Jason and Justin. And just read antiwar.com all the time. And even if you just skim the crap, you know what I mean? Like after a little while, it'll soak in. You want to learn about Iran's nuclear program? Find somebody who's your best writer on that. Say, for example, Gareth Porter. And I'd recommend you to Gordon Prather as well, he's retired now, but has a great archive at antiwar.com. And just go through and read about it, I don't know, 600 of those or something, and you'll be the master of the subject. And that's really what it's all about. And that's really what this show is about, is telling you about stuff that you can read. You know? I mean, I try my best to teach things my own self, but mostly this is like the book club, the article club. Hey, man, did you see this one? It's really important. Or at least it's hilarious and at Richard Engel's expense or whatever the case may be. So anyway, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm so interested in radio, is because it has a much broader reach than these articles usually do. And I want the articles to have a broader reach. So I want you to listen to my Gareth Porter interviews, but I really want you to read Gareth Porter. That's the point of the show, is me showing up here every day saying, read the thing that Gareth wrote. Then you'll understand what is the truth of the thing that he's writing about. But on the other hand, I do try to, explain as much context as I think I can cram in there. So, for example, break out your map of the Middle East here for a second. You know, you got Iran there on the eastern side of the Persian Gulf. They're Shiites and Persians, right? Then you got the Arabian Peninsula dominated by Saudi, and they're mostly allies in the Gulf Cooperation Council. And then now, because of George Bush, all the land from Baghdad down to Kuwait, that's all Iraqi Shiites stand now in alliance with Iran. And all the land to the west of Baghdad in the Anbar province and up in the north up to Mosul and up to Kurdistan and Turkey and Syria in the northwest, that's all Sunnistan, Iraqi Sunnistan, now under the domination of the Islamic State. And then to their north and east you have Kurdistan, which is a giant region full of Kurds that is bisected by five different powers, right? Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Syria. And then Armenia and Azerbaijan actually have, you know, a little bit too. So call that five or six. And then so the Islamic State, they own all of Iraqi Sunnistan, again, this area in the west and northwest of what used to be Iraq. And the Americans are backing the Iranian-backed Shiites and the Kurds and their alliance against the Islamic State. And the Islamic State extends to the west, to the entire eastern half of, two-thirds even, of Syria, although most of that is countryside and desert. And most of all the population centers are still under the control of the government there. The Islamic State really, I mean, the al-Nusra fighters, who are basically just like the Islamic State, only a different power faction, still loyal to al-Qaeda, where the Islamic State is not, they've taken Idlib, which is the second major city that they've really owned this whole time. They never really succeeded, I don't think, in taking Homs or Aleppo. They've had somewhat control at times and then have been driven back, that kind of thing. But now they really seem to have taken control of Idlib, and I don't know, you know, whether they're going to move on from there and let the Islamic State take over the administration of the place. Today, the Yarmouk Palestinian refugee camp, I read that after taking it, I think I read it right, that after taking it from al-Nusra, the Islamic State gave it back to them and withdrew. ISIS withdraws from Damascus camp. Al-Qaeda takes over. And this is the Yarmouk refugee camp. And by the way, there's a great article by our friend Ramzi Baroud at antiwar.com today about just the damned tragedy and who all is responsible for what's happened to the Palestinians living in this refugee camp in Syria. And what are they even doing there? They got kicked out of their country for not being Jewish. That's what happened to them. They're exiled because of the wrong religion. And Netanyahu said, oh yeah, you can come back to the West Bank, but you have to renounce your right to return to your former actual land in Israel. And they refused to do that, so they rot in perpetuity in this refugee camp by the millions most of the time. I think like 1 million people live there, although they're all, you know, refugees from their refugee camp now. And I don't know, man, Jason's story, what a mess with her. Hamas-linked fighters chase the Islamic State out, and then al-Qaeda takes it over. Al-Qaeda, al-Nusra in Syria, that's working with the Israelis. So Hamas chased the Islamic State out so that Israel's allies and al-Qaeda could take over the damn thing. And meanwhile, and think of how ridiculous this is, that to say, man, those refugees ought to be let back into Israel where they're from. That is ridiculous, beyond the pale, anti-Semitic. That's crazy. That's not serious. That's never going to happen. So just shut up about it. Why would you even bring that up? That's so silly to say. But yeah, let them all get butchered to death by al-Qaeda and the Islamic State fighting over the spoils of their pathetic refugee camp. And empowering Hamas in the mix, giving them a little bit more battlefield experience and all this. Oh, that's all perfectly reasonable. Or at least, you know, acceptable as an outcome, seems to be what's happening now. But letting them come home to their father's land that they got kicked out of? Psh, are you crazy? That could offset the 80-20 super-duper majority balance in Israel so that it can remain Jewish and democratic and just continue to deprive the Palestinians of their rights to participate in their one party, their one state solution that they're living in right now. Anyway. So there's the western half of the ISIS war right now. Idlib under the control of al-Qaeda. The Yarmouk camp under the control of al-Qaeda. The Islamic State firmly entrenched. And at least in Raqqa and the rest of the countryside. And in Iraq, over in the eastern side of the Islamic State, in the land formerly known as Iraq, which will never be Iraq again, if that means Kurdistan and Sunnistan under the control of Baghdad, that's not going to happen for another 500 years. But anyway, over there in Eastern Islamic State, the Americans and the Iranians and the Shiite militias have teamed up again, just like in George Bush's Iraq War II, to at least take Tikrit back. But now the Islamic State is doubling down in Ramadi, and apparently they're going to fall soon completely. David Enders was reporting how they were pretty much on their last legs about 3 weeks ago at Vice. Was that all right for background and detail?
So you're a libertarian, and you don't believe the propaganda about government awesomeness you were subjected to in fourth grade. You want real history and economics. Well, learn in your car from professors you can trust with Tom Woods's Liberty Classroom. And if you join through the Liberty Classroom link at scotthorton.org, we'll make a donation to support the Scott Horton Show. Liberty Classroom, the history and economics they didn't teach you.
Hey, all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me.
Hey guys, welcome back. All right, it's my show, Scott Horton Show. Sorry, probably didn't need to hear that. Okay, you know, in the next hour, we're going to cover Iran and the nuclear program and all that. But right now, let me talk to you about the war in Yemen. The Iraqi prime minister, that's Abadi from the Dawa party, backed by America and Iran, says Saudi attack on Yemen could lead to regional sectarian war. Fresh off his visit to the White House, writes Jason Ditz at news.antiwar.com, Iraqi Premier Haider Abadi expressed serious concerns about the Saudi attack on Yemen, warning it could quickly escalate into a region-wide sectarian war. Like, he's not in the middle of fighting one right now. Could lead to that, maybe. All right. Well, maybe, in fairness, he just stepped out of a time machine from 2002, and he's talking about the invasion in the first place, no? Maybe. Facing nonstop sectarian war themselves, Iraqis are understandably sensitive to anything that might make matters even worse. Abadi claimed to have spoken to Obama about this and said the U.S., quote, shares his concerns on the war. The White House was quick to deny this, however, saying they have no problem with the Saudi war at all. That's unsurprising, of course, because while they haven't exactly publicized the fact, the U.S. military is participating in the war. Saudi Ambassador to the U.S., Adel Al-Jubeer, slammed the criticism of his country's war, saying Abadi should focus on the problems in his own country and not worry about who the Saudis are invading at any given moment. And, of course, the Saudis are in large part responsible for financing the enemies that Abadi is fighting in Iraq right now. Our allies, the Saudis, the backers of the bin Ladenites. The U.S. being on Iraq's side against Sunni insurgents in that country and backing Saudi Arabia's Sunni coalition in attacking Shiites in Yemen is making their regional position harder and harder to justify to nations therein. I love Jason's writing. I should just shut up my commentary and just read him. He's better than me by far. The U.S. has long done whatever seems expedient at any given moment in the Middle East, which somehow always seems to be war. But as their interventions grow, the lack of justification for them is becoming more and more... Oh, I put my inflection wrong. But as their interventions grow, the lack of justification for them is becoming more and more obvious. And, you know, that's the whole thing here. I was actually trying to get Stephen Walt on the show to talk about his piece about Iran, and it's mostly in the context of the nuclear deal, but he's saying the nuclear deal doesn't matter. What really matters is America and Iran and our competing positions for power in the Middle East. And he's a realist, right? He's not a libertarian or an anti-interventionist at all, but he's absolutely sane as a stone compared to the completely crazy neoconservatives who you know, wake up every morning wanting to bomb something. And so what he's saying is, our policy in the Middle East basically is preventing any one power from dominating the rest. Now, from an anti-interventionist point of view, from any realistic, not realist, but realistic point of view, it doesn't matter whether Iran or Saudi or anybody else or Saddam Hussein's rotting corpse or anybody else rules the whole Middle East. They still got to sell their oil. It doesn't matter anyway. It's a small percentage of the world supply. Markets will take care of things. Learn about markets. They're good at taking care of things. But anyway, so he's saying, look, our goal is to make sure that nobody's too dominant. That's why we don't need dual containment. We just need offshore balancing, right? That's what the realists say. And Stephen Walt points out, as I was just describing in the last segment there, the entire region is split apart in sectarian war right now. Everybody is off balance and destabilized, and nobody's getting ahead. Despite all the hype about Iran conquering the region, Iran ain't conquering anything. The Americans handed them not total dominance, but extreme amounts of influence in Baghdad because of our war there and our war on behalf of their handpicked chosen factions. And so, which of course, as a reaction, helped to lead to the rise of the bin Ladenite Al-Qaeda in Iraq, later the Islamic State and al-Nusra Front that grew out of that. As a reaction to America siding, not just with the Shiites, but with Iran's handpicked factions, the meanest bastards in town, like the Badr Brigade, and later also the Mahdi Army, and others now too, the Shiite militias. They'll drill you to death. But anyway, to get to the point, if America's policy, like Stephen Walt says, is to just make sure that no other regional player becomes completely dominant over there, then mission accomplished by turning the whole place upside down. We can go ahead and get out now then. We don't even need to offshore balance them. Just sit back and look at the destruction that George Bush and Barack Obama's presidencies have brought to that region. You know, George Bush turned all of, again, Iraqi Sunnistan, in the west and northwest, into jihadistan, right, into bin Laden territory, where bin Laden could never go but was there in spirit. And now basically his incarnation, al-Baghdadi, is the caliph of the whole damn thing. And that's because Barack Obama doubled down on George Bush's folly, and he backed the Mujahideen in Libya and in Syria. So if George Bush is 100% responsible for this, so is Barack Obama, which is fine because responsibility is a quality, not a quantity. So they can both be 100% responsible, and they are. And the leaders of the Islamic State, they're all responsible too. I'm not saying they're not. But none of this would have happened if Uday and Qusay were over there riding herd on what few bin Ladenites would have ever poked their head up in the first place. And again, when I say things like that, I don't want anyone to misunderstand. I do not support the Ronald Reagan, George H.W. Bush policy before the turn and the backstab. But I do not support the policy of supporting Saddam Hussein or the Bill Clinton, George W. Bush policy of supporting Assad against these guys. But for crying out loud, supporting the Mujahideen against them? I mean, what Bush did was so stupid as to be treasonous in its stupidity and the benefit to Americans' enemies in the world. But what Obama did was just deliberately and outright treasonous. And I hate to cite the Washington Times, but it really is good work, well-sourced, and with plenty of good quotes. And they make the case very well in their four-part series that, if you've been listening to the show, I spent, I don't know, all of January and February, I think, talking about. And I interviewed the lady, Kelly Riddell, who did the, who was co-author of the series. And it was all about how the CIA and the DOD really tried to stop Hillary from starting the Libya war. And Obama went with Hillary instead of with the national security state. The standing army was trying to prevent the civilian from starting a war. They were overruled. Oh, the ironies of empire. And part of their argument was the same argument that you were hearing on this show at the time. That, yeah, but Gaddafi's enemies are the Mujahideen. You can go find Michael Scheuer on CNN telling the ladies, listen, if this war was going on anywhere else, if this was in Iraq, these very same guys, we would call these the Mujahideen. These are the Bin Ladenites, the guys, the veterans of our last war, veterans of the Iraq war. Come home to Libya, just like was warned that if you turn all of Western Iraq into Jihadistan, you have people from all over the region going there and then going home again. And then what? Then what? Obama and Hillary will back them. That's when you can always know that your right-wing source is disingenuous, when they attack Hillary and Obama for Benghazi, but not for the whole Libya war. If they were being honest with you, they would say, yeah, boy, we screwed up because we were on the same side of that war, too. And it turned out the war was for the Libyan Islamic Fighting Group and Ansar al-Sharia and the Libyan veterans of Iraq War II. And Obama supported them. And then as soon as it was over, they created what was called the Rat Line, you know, like rescuing Nazi officers. The Rat Line, as reported by Seymour Hersh in The New Yorker, and immediately started funneling, and hell, in The New York Times and The Sunday Times of London and all over the place, immediately started shipping off fighters and guns to go fight the jihad in Syria too, leading to the rise of the Islamic State and al-Nusra. So, how do you like that? What the hell's wrong with this thing?
Hey, Al Scott here. If you've got a band, a business, a cause, or campaign, and you need stickers to help promote, check out thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. They digitally print with solvent ink, so you get the photo quality results of digital with the strength and durability of old-style screen printing. I'm sure glad I sold thebumpersticker.com to Rick back when. He's made a hell of a great company out of it, and there are thousands of satisfied customers who agree with me, too. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com.
Hey, Al Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. And if this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Robertson Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Robertson Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
Oh, man. Well, if I was you, I'd turn me off and go, I'll admit. If I was you, I'd turn me off and go watch the live stream of the Force Awakens panel at the Star Wars celebration thing. I never went to one of those things or anything, but I guess it never occurred to me I could watch a live stream of one. Although it looks really stupid. But maybe someone's going to say something that... Actually, I don't want to know about that movie. I wonder if it's going to be good. It seems like the pressure is on the new director to not do like what happened last time with the last three when they turned out to not be no good. But then again, it's owned by Disney now. I just don't know. And have faith in the Force, I guess. Yeah. I've been told to simmer down for accusing a lady of child abuse for putting her kid in a government school. A government school that got a search warrant to search her house and took her kid away, kidnapped her child, based on the probable cause that her kid contradicted the lying DARE cop was telling the rest of the kids about a bunch of lying propaganda about pot. His mother, who takes medicinal pot oil that doesn't even make you feel good, which would be criminal. She got busted and they took her kids away. But I should simmer down for accusing the mother of making a bad decision in turning her children over to the government all day. Why do you think they call it the school-to-prison pipeline? It's because it's in their interests to abuse you and your kids. Did you ever think of that? Yeah, but I saw on TV that the only thing that government does, they do out of fairness in order to make sure that everything is fair. And that you can always trust a cop to do the right thing. You can always trust a prosecutor to employ just the right amount of persecution and no more than that. That people need to be better. Right? Isn't that what government does? They make everything okay. Except that they don't. But you're still just supposed to believe that anyway. I saw a lady in the Twitter comments yesterday talking about how she brought it up in her circle of mommies, as she called it, something like that. And they all just said, yes, absolutely, at the drop of a hat, they would call the police on each other over the slightest little thing that they thought was wrong. Right? And not because, well, and only because, I hope, they just have no, you know, accurate, educated guess, truly educated guess as to then what might happen. They're not thinking of it in terms of which might destroy all of your lives forever, which might be the worst thing that could possibly happen to you. They just have this basically an emptiness, probably mostly, where an educated guess should go, filled in by vague images from TV. That when the authorities come, it'll be like your mommy and daddy coming and making sure that everything is fine. Right? Like in this case, the kid said to the DARE cop, come on, that's not true. And they went and executed a search warrant on his mom's house. Put charges on her and took her children away from her. And gave them to who? Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely the right thing, though, right? Because that's what you're supposed to do, right? And what you know in your brain and what you let get piled on top of that, contradicting it, what you learn from the authorities, you know, I guess their point of view always wins over your own, right? You might think in any other circumstance, oh, isn't that a shame? But geez, I guess if the government did it, then they must have needed to, right? Just like they needed to teach the kids, have the DARE cops teach them about drugs. You know, the first idea I ever had in my head that doing drugs was anything but like totally verboten in the consensus was, like many of you, at the DARE meetings. Isn't that the same for you? The first time I went to a DARE class in junior high, they showed film of these 1970s kids like sitting on at a picnic table in the park, smoking a joint. Which we had been taught was so insane and criminal and horrible that you would naturally, if anyone was to ever do such a horrible thing, they would be in total hiding, like if they were cutting up a dead body or something, right? You'd hide in the crawl space under the pantry or something. Here these kids, like it's a perfectly normal thing. On a bright sunny day, they're happily sitting around on a park bench smoking a joint like it ain't no thing. And then the narrator has to come up with these completely implausible reasons why they're really having a bad time, you know, but you just can't tell. Huh? You mean it's a normal thing to sit around smoking a joint? First time I ever thought that in my life, it was right when I was being subjected to drug abuse resistance education in my government school. I was such a stupid kid. It's a good thing my parents didn't do drugs. I might have come up with something to say just to say something. Oh, yeah. Look at me. Like this poor kid, he didn't mean any harm. He was correcting a lying cop propagandizing his schoolmates. And now his family's destroyed. And we'll see, you know, indefinitely, we'll see whether they decide to give the kids back to the mom after all or what. And then we'll see how long before she moves to Spain. because she can't believe what a totalitarian police state she lives in. It's just like Radley Balco's speech on the SWAT teams. You know, they created these things for a hostage situation at the local bank. And then they just spread. And then what are they going to do? Sit around doing nothing all day? So they start executing drug warrants. And then so they get completely integrated into the drug war. And now every drug case gets a SWAT team. And then very quickly from there, they're enforcing braiding licensing laws, hairstyling licensing laws. Very quickly from there, they're inspecting bars' license, regulatory compliance. Yeah, SWAT teams. Not just enforcing drug warrants. You know, first they go crisis situations, to then drug warrants, to then all kinds of warrants, to then just regulatory inspection, to just getting pulled over. You might get pulled over by a cop who is dressed basically like in his SWAT fatigues, only maybe without all of the gear on as he's out patrolling around, right? Maybe not with the SWAT helmet. But still, he's wearing all black, and it's all much more like fatigues than slacks and a security officer shirt. It's the same kind of thing. This stuff just escalates. The authorities, it's a self-licking ice cream cone, the authority of the authorities. Hey, as long as they're the cops, they gotta find things to do. So yeah, man, it's a shame when you hear about Luca up there on the second floor getting beaten within an inch of her life by her alcoholic father every night. So, you know, isn't it a good idea for a locally, democratically controlled authority to have say in order to protect children from situations like that? Sure, sounds reasonable. Next thing you know, they're breaking families apart for no reason at all. Because the mom is on THC-less medical marijuana oil for her Crohn's disease. The criminal mastermind. And God only knows what happened to the kids, right? Anyway. It's scary living in America, man. You know why? It's because it's arbitrary power. That's what's scary about it. Jeez, if they go too far, what might ever happen to them? Right? You know, people used to say things like, oh, I'm going to have your badge. Oh, I'm going to sue you. You're breaking the law, officer, and you're not going to get away with it. But now nobody believes that, right? Of course he's going to get away with it.
Don't you get sick of the Israel lobby trying to get us into more war in the Middle East? Or always abusing Palestinians with your tax dollars? It once seemed like the lobby would always have full-spectrum dominance on the foreign policy discussion in D.C. But those days are over. The Council for the National Interest is the America Lobby, standing up and pushing back against the Israel Lobby's undue influence on Capitol Hill. Go show some support at councilforthenationalinterest.org. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org.
All right, guys, welcome back. Sorry, I didn't mean to divert off into the cops there, but I like complaining about the drug war and scary police state stuff. By the way, cops have killed way more Americans in America than terrorists have. That's at boingboing.net, and I think they're using a very conservative estimate here. They're showing, oh, it's fatal encounters, I guess what they have so far. At least 5,600 people since the year 2000 have been shot by cops. 5,600 people. And then check this one out. Now, the time scale is not exactly the same. This one is going from 2005. So 5 years into a 15-year time span here. So if you want to do the comparison there, the thirds and the quarters and all that. But anyway, among the thousands of fatal shootings at the hands of police since 2005, only 54 officers have been charged, found the Washington Post. And, it's a little heavy on the narrative, although individual cases are very important. It doesn't really talk as much about the investigation part as it should have, I think. But anyway, and they don't really get to why. It's the sovereign immunity. so-called qualified immunity, oftentimes it's called, which means that if they kill you while they're on the clock, it's fine. It means if they kill you while on the clock, all they got to do is yell, waistband. Oh, he's reaching for his waistband. You try that. You kill somebody and go, yeah, but Your Honor, he's reaching for his waistband. And if so, his waistband, maybe he's pulling up his pants. You can't murder somebody for reaching for their waistband. What the hell is that? But if you're a cop, all you have to do is say, waistband, and you're done. You go home. You get 2 weeks paid vacation. You go to the islands. Then you go home. Then you go back to work and do it again. And that's why they get away with it. They're trained to that officer's safety is first. Their job is not to protect the rights of the suspect. Their job is to protect themselves. And the way that they do that, rather than minimum amount of force necessary, they go with the Colin Powell doctrine, overwhelming force. You know, like a gang initiation ceremony or whatever, right? 6-on-1. And then, hey, the quicker we beat him within an inch of his life, the quicker, you know, we have him in hand and no problem. No risk to ourselves. That's their mantra. And so they're not peace officers. They're soldiers. They're almost completely militarized, the domestic police all across the country, with their training and their equipment, their mindset. And the fact that they know they'll never get in trouble. 54 out of thousands and thousands anyway, whatever. Since 2005, call it 3,000 or 2.5 or whatever you want to call it. Thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. And these are just the ones that are prosecuted. These aren't the convictions. As it says in the article here, there are times where the prosecutor says, holy crap, this one is just way over the line, and I'm going to have a riot in the poor black part of town if I don't do something, and so this guy is getting scapegoated. We're going to go ahead and prosecute him, call him a bad apple. And the juries will say, no, forget it, the juries, the grand juries and the regular petit juries too will just acquit these guys and let them go. No bill for you, acquittal for you. And, of course, oftentimes that's because it's a bunch of former cops who retired in their early 50s, unlike anyone in the free market gets to ever do, that are sitting on the jury. No conflict of interest there. That's the proof that they're the most upstanding citizens of all. Anyway, so there you go. Thousands and thousands and thousands since 2005, the Washington Post, and they state unequivocally, I don't know if that's an indication of how correct they are, that this is it. We looked. We got all the best experts, and we did all the best digging through all the records we could possibly find. 54 cops have been prosecuted, and much less than that have been convicted. So now, if you're a cop, and they dress you up like you're some Delta Force or Navy SEAL, they tell you that go patrol your sector for enemies. And you just got home from Iraq where you were a Delta Force or always, you know, maybe you were a Ranger and always wanted to be. Now you're more armed than you ever were in the Iraq War. Two, for those keeping track I'm referring to here. Iraq War Two. And they tell you, and don't worry, no matter who you kill, it's fine. You don't even really need a drop gun anymore. Just say waistband. If anybody asks, say waistband. And you'll get 2 weeks paid vacation, free to go. And the browner the skin, the more immunity you got. Well, we see what happens under those circumstances, under those incentives. Innocent people get killed all day. Three a day are killed by the cops in America. Three a day. And you heard Rayford Davis, the former North Charleston, South Carolina police officer, on the show. He said, when you're a cop and you're going around basically bullying and persecuting innocent everyday people, not criminals, but everyday people who are, you know, at least supposedly guilty of this or that offense or violation, then you become a bastard too. That's not his words, that's mine, but. You internalize that. You become the police state. Even if you thought your job, like, maybe would be pulling people from burning cars and catching a burglar in the act and some heroic stuff gets you on TV, and you find out that all day long you're helping banks kick people out of their houses and enforcing God knows what kind of regulations on their lives that they didn't even know existed. And so then you become the bully, even if you weren't in the first place, you become the bully playing that role. The role of the modern American law enforcer. Bully. And so that's why America sucks now, because everybody let it. Because instead of everybody being absolutely mad as hell and refusing to stand for this, yeah, people mostly go along with it still. And I guess, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe it's true that just because the cops never beat the crap out of you, that the 10,000 times in your life you've heard people complaining like that, those are all just lies and it's really not a problem. Because after all, the definition of a problem is something that happened to you specifically, right? Otherwise, who cares? What do you mean there's an epidemic of police violence completely out of control with nothing in common with actual law enforcement in that sense at all, you know? By any free society standard. What do you mean I've spent my entire life hearing about police abuse? What do you mean every time I open Facebook, there's another set of pictures or video of somebody getting the crap beat out of them or worse by these guys? Nah. If the pollster asks me, I'm going to say, well, they never mess with me personally, so what do I care? And we'll go on. All right. Iran and Yemen and Afghanistan and stuff next. Sorry for going on so long about the cops, but God dang, don't you think it's a little out of control now? Huh?
Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back. So, hey, man, they're showing the new Star Wars droid, and it's not just computer-generated. They actually got the head to balance on top of the damn thing like that somehow. You know what I'm talking about, the little orange one? That's pretty cool, man. I have to like Star Wars. Come on, I don't have a choice. It's just how it is. All right, so listen, I mentioned Stephen Walt earlier about how, it's not even really about nukes so much. Atom bomb is not that big of a deal. It doesn't change the game that much in terms of the power of the countries who've gotten them so far, and it's not that big of a deal anyway. And besides, they apparently have decided, the Iranians, that they don't really need one. They have at least a pseudo, you know, religious reason that they claim to not want one. But strategically, they've decided it doesn't make much sense either, apparently. They could have snuck out and made a bomb all along. The real question here is, they could have tried. The real question is the future of America's ability to deal with Iran's role in the region and its increasing power in the region. And again, to beat a dead horse, the number one single most important thing that led to the increase of their power in the region is America's invasion of Iraq. And not just invasion, but the occupation and fighting a civil war for the Shiites, basically, against the Sunni-based insurgency and cleansing them, as they call it, from the capital city. And so they have a very important ally in Iraqi Shiistan now. And if they ever had security over there, it could become a very rich place, although it's very corrupt. They have a fight with the Islamic State on their hands for now, but in the future, Iraq will be a great benefit, a great win for Iran. You could argue it's a bit of a liability right now, but certainly worth using Chalabi to trick the neocons into tricking the ridiculous right-wing nationalists into going ahead and doing that war back in 03 for them. But anyway, my point is that Walt has it basically half right, or, you know, maybe three quarters right. But, you know, in my point of view, we could just go. There's enough division. There's enough chaos created by American intervention thus far in the Bush and Obama years over there to last 100 years or worse. So we can quit picking winners and losers in it now. If anything, the people politically interested in America would prefer to have high oil prices. You know, you got a bunch of guys in Houston getting their asses kicked right now. So, and that's under the bogus assumption that American intervention over there keeps things stable and keeps the price low, when it's really just the opposite anyway. But if you accept that premise that we got to keep it our way, our guys would prefer to let there be an Iranian and Saudi civil war so they can make more money pumping in from Nigeria and from Venezuela, from Canada. You know, anyway. So my thing is, we could just get out of the Middle East altogether in terms of energy policy and imperial policy and all that. We really don't need them. Now, I'm not recommending pivot to Asia and Africa and Eastern Europe instead. We shouldn't pivot to anywhere other than really we could abolish our standing army and just get completely out of the national security state, global empire business altogether. But focusing on the Middle East, American intervention has made it this way. And, well, as the Kagans like to put it, and they're talking about, this is as they promote intervention in Iraq and putting 25,000 troops on the ground in Iraq. But the same quote applies to their entire argument about the entire Middle East, whether we're talking about Syria, Jordan, Saudi, Iran, Iraq, or Hezbollah or anything else. They say it is impossible to articulate a clear path to the desired end state. Yeah, exactly. The most coherent argument they ever had was the clean break, and we saw how clean that break came out. The whole thing is a complete ridiculous disaster. It was supposed to be easy. And anyway, so I would also like to cite for my thesis Dick Cheney. Jason Leopold has this great article from July 2004 where he reminds us, I used to complain about this back in the 90s too, hey look everybody, we should listen to this guy, this sick bastard. Dick Cheney in 1996 denounced Bill Clinton's sanctions when he was the CEO of Halliburton and trying to do business with Iran. Remember, he was the right-wing hawk who led the minority report taking Reagan's side in the Iran-Contra thing as a member of the House of Representatives, Dick Cheney was. So he certainly is well familiar with the subject. And he said, let me make a generalized statement about a trend I see in the U.S. Congress that I find disturbing, that applies not only with respect to the Iranian situation, but a number of others as well. I think we Americans sometimes make mistakes. There seems to be an assumption that somehow we know what's best for everybody else. And that, I can't even read without breaking up laughing. This is a Dick Cheney quote, I swear to God. I know you don't believe me. This guy, Scott Horton's a liar. Dick Cheney would have never said that. No, really. You'd have had to go back to 1996, but yeah. There seems to be an assumption that somehow we know what's best for everybody else, and we are going to use our economic clout to get everybody else to live the way we would like. You know, like the sanctions. But then he says, I think we'd be better off if we, in fact, backed off those sanctions on Iran, didn't try to impose secondary boycotts on companies trying to do business over there, and instead started to rebuild those relationships. Oh, that was in 1998 in Sydney. And, yeah, so anyway, there you go. There's Dick Cheney in the 1990s, back when it was in his private company's interest, saying, let's lift the sanctions. Let's do business. The Iranians are people, too. We can work with them. Let Halliburton around these sanctions, reckless Mr. Clinton and reckless Republican Congress. And, of course, don't let the guy be the vice president of your limited republic. Because you know what happens when he has a military that he can use at no cost to his investors. Pure profit for them. That's the American system. Socialize your costs and privatize your profits. The Cheney way. But he was right then. He was wrong with power and was right when he was just trying to make a deal and make money for the people who gave him the job that he was losing money for. And now, listen, I didn't have a chance to read this, so we'll have coverage of this one, but it's important that you know it exists. It's at Politico, their magazine. They have I don't know whoever's the editor over there. They've published some pretty good things there at Politico magazine, I have to admit. How Israel hid its secret nuclear weapons program. Not Iran, Israel. How they hid their secret nuclear weapons program, and it's by Avner Cohen and William Burr. And they better give credit to Grant Smith for this document from 1987 about the H-bomb program that he recently uncovered. I would hate to think that they're stealing all his thunder, man. But anyway, I don't really believe in that intellectual property stuff very much, but it seems like it's polite to give credit. Anyway, all about Israel's nuclear weapons program in Politico magazine. So I guess we're not pretending that's a secret anymore. That's good. Nuts, I'm almost out of time for this segment, but a friend sent me this tweet this morning, how the Iran lobby sidetracked the nuclear talks. Now, that is the worst title for this thing. It has nothing to do with the Iran lobby in America doing anything. And what it's about is a completely just made-up contention that there's a secret parallel nuclear weapons program in Iran that nobody knows about. And everybody knows that. And so all that's being addressed is this ridiculous sideshow, which is completely ridiculous. And I may talk about it, or I may just let it go at that.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop, which is, by the way, what he's doing right now, selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the goddamn thing here, man. All right, now I'm going to get back to that stupid Washington Times thing in a second, but maybe I won't. I wanted to point out that America's still bombing Pakistan with drones there. This one's from the 12th. U.S. drone strike kills 4 in North Waziristan. They also claim that they killed, and I guess Al-Qaeda agreed that they killed, if I remember that right, Al-Qaeda also said that the Americans had gotten one of their leaders in Yemen in a drone strike. I may have that confused. They were saying that somebody had died, but maybe I'm conflating that with the Yemen drone strike, and it was two separate stories now that I think about it. Anyway, they did do a Yemen drone strike and claimed that they got... Actually, they claimed they got an Al-Qaeda clergyman. Not an operational terrorist type, but a religionist who goes around justifying what they do. I guess... You know, we're so far past the point of whether there's a law about that or anything. Doesn't really matter, right? Al-Awlaki should have been protected by the First Amendment, what he said. Under the Brandenburg interpretation of the First Amendment, which is the current Supreme Court precedent, anything but an immediate and legitimate incitement to violence. Like, come on, mob, let's burn this house down, or let's get 'em, or... That kind of thing in a immediate circumstance. Otherwise, it's all protected. And if you're a U.S. person, that means you're an American citizen or anyone else on American soil or an American citizen anywhere in the world that they go is still a U.S. person. And therefore, under the law, if there was such a thing, protected by the First Amendment. I don't know about... whether that applies technically to foreigners or not. but I'm against murder, and it seems like a bad idea to target the clergy guys, or I don't know if you call them clergy, but you know. Anyway. But back to Afghanistan. Yeah, there's still drone bombing in Pakistan and Afghanistan. There was that insider attack last week, was the first American that died over there in a while, so I guess mostly it is, if anybody's going out on missions, it's the Afghan army. And I guess American air power there more. But they still have, according to the New York Times, and it's James Risen, who's not perfect, but he's one of the very best guys at the New York Times, no doubt about that. I don't know this for a fact, but I know he at least proudly claims that he was skeptical about all the WMD stuff before the war and was relegated to the back pages. I forget whether anybody ever verified whether that was true or not. I know it was Michael Gordon, who, along with Judith Miller, were the worst on Iraq back then. But anyway, Risen writes, in Afghanistan alone, where about 9,800 American troops are deployed, the Pentagon, and that's not including SOCOM and JSOC, so probably make it an even 10 or more, or who knows how many. In Afghanistan alone, where about 9,800 American troops are still deployed, the Pentagon is paying for almost 40,000 private contractors. These are not State Department contractors. These are all working for DOD, more than a third of whom are American, according to a CENTCOM report. Only a few hundred are involved directly in security, he writes, while others are doing everything from serving food to conducting intelligence work. Still, though, 40,000 with, call it 10,000 actual mercs. And those are just working for DOD. We don't know about working for the CIA or the State Department, too. I guess we assume the State Department mercs are mostly just guards. But anyway, so there you go. They certainly lied when they said America would be out of there by the end of 2014, didn't they? You know what's the proof of that? They're still there, and it's not 2014 anymore. And they can't leave. I mean, the idea is that if they leave, then the Taliban is just going to march right back in to Kabul. Although, you know, I think there's plenty of indication that Taliban already has quite a bit of influence in Kabul anyway. I guess Obama's putting off the last humiliation until the Jeb Bush administration. I still just can't believe it's supposed to be Hillary. Everybody's going to go along with Hillary. Everybody's going to be so sick of her, double, extra, triple sick of her by the end of this campaign, dude. There's just no way. I mean, then again, Jeb Bush is a real boob, so he could blow it, I guess. I mean, they have their backups just in case Jeb completely blows it, but come on. It's going to be Jeb. Anyway, I'm going to say that final defeat in Afghanistan for the next guy, I guess. That's called leadership in Washington, D.C. And then here's Daniel McAdams. The U.S. military lands in Ukraine. All this attention to the Middle East, and these guys could get all of humanity blown up to death in hydrogen bomb thermonuclear fusion fire. Woo-woo, you like that? Kill your whole city with one shot, these H-bombs. The Russian side has about 7,000 of them still. Or no, maybe they got about 3, we got 7, something like that. Still, 3,000 H-bombs, that'll destroy all of North America forever. For humanity, anyway. I guess there'll be giant cockroaches in the future or whatever. But that'll be the end of all of us, individuals and our civilization, if we ever got into a war with Russia. And here we are screwing around in Ukraine. And it's so obvious, and people are making the comparison more and more because of how obvious it is, that this is like if Russia, if the USSR, had won the Cold War, and then they expanded their Warsaw Pact military alliance to all of Western Europe, and then expanded it even to Canada and Mexico, and were overthrowing governments in order to put communist-friendly regimes in Canada and Mexico. What the hell would America do about that? We would have already started the nuclear war against them. So, you put your shoe on the other foot for just a second, And you realize that, hey, you know, maybe we should have listened to George Kennan, the guy who came up with the containment policy against the Soviet Union in the first place, when he said in 1998, a good 7 years after the end of the Cold War, we should not expand NATO. We should not go try to incorporate Russia's Canada, Ukraine, into our military alliance. That might really piss them off. It might really worry them. And then here's how easy these things can go wrong, even when nobody means to push it too far. Submarine in Sweden was only a civilian boat. They had a whole big scare that could have been glommed onto, that could have been turned into a Gulf of Tonkin resolution, Gulf of Tonkin situation of overblown hype, if they'd really wanted it to, where they thought, oh yeah, there was a Russian submarine patrolling where it ain't supposed to be patrolling, provoking the Swedes. Oops, our mistake. Could have gotten all of humanity, at least in the Northern Hemisphere, wiped out. But anyway, whatever. Don't worry about it, everybody. Not a big deal. And then I'd also like to direct your attention again to the Moon of Alabama blog, where they do a great job of keeping up with Ukraine and Syria stuff. And this one's called Ukraine Right Sector. That's the Nazis, the American-backed Nazis in Ukraine. Right Sector breaks ceasefire. And it's funny because what they do is they compare and contrast the Associated Press report with the relevant report from the Operation for Security and Cooperation in Europe that say that the Ukrainian side, assessed to be the Right Sector Volunteer Battalion, earlier had made an offensive push through the line of contact toward Zabunki. And so, yeah, there you go. The OSCE says that the Nazis, I mean, they spin it a bit, right? The people of Donetsk fired at the Ukrainians. This was preceded by them being attacked by the Right Sector Nazis. At least they admit that, but that much gets omitted from the Associated Press report. Oh, yeah, no, there was an explosion, and never mind which was the tit and which was the tat. Just like always. And, you know, I don't know, man. See, I was thinking. I think it's nice that mostly Americans just want to live their life and mind their own business and not pay attention to these kinds of things. But that should translate into an unwillingness to tolerate intervention in these kinds of things. What we have is complete intervention combined with popular ignorance, and it's leading us to ruin and possibly a real risk of war with Russia. Anyway, probably not. See you tomorrow.